Good morning, everybody. Haven't the Pathfinders done a wonderful job of taking the service so far this morning? Okay, today we're looking at young leaders, which we've got a great bunch of them over there, being the church of today. Jeremiah 6, "Alas, sovereign Lord," I said, "I do not know how to speak. I am too young." Xiao Mei was 5 years old. Unlike other five-year-olds, she wasn't running around the family home getting up to mischief. Xiao Mei was with her mother in prison. They'd been imprisoned by the Red Guard in mainland China. The Red Guard was a group of school kids that Chairman Mao had got to dob on everybody and get put in prison, tortured. And this is where Xiao Mei and her mother was. Xiao Mei's mother wasn't a hardened criminal. She was a Christian, and they were in prison because of her belief in God. Xiao Mei's mother spent her time whispering soothing words to Xiao Mei, trying to ease the pain in her daughter's tears. The other prisoners and even the guards were disgusted that this mother would let her young daughter suffer the harsh dangers of prison life. Finally, the prison director convinced Xiao Mei's mother to help her daughter and renounce her faith in God. On her release, she was forced on stage in front of 10,000 people, where she stated for all to hear, "I am no longer a Christian." Xiao Mei and her mother then returned home, free. When they got home, Xiao Mei didn't run to her room and grab her favourite toy. She didn't go to the kitchen for some delicious home-cooked food. She didn't even thank her mother for getting her out of prison. No. Xiao Mei looked at her mother and said to her, "Mummy, today Jesus is not happy with you." Her mother sat down and explained with tears in her eyes. Ooh. Let's make that bigger again. That she had done all that she had done only to protect Xiao Mei. That whilst they were in prison, Xiao Mei had wept and that had hurt her so much. She had to say those things out of love for Xiao Mei so that they didn't need to suffer anymore. Again, Xiao Mei didn't thank her mother. She looked up at her and said, "I promise that if we go to jail again for Jesus, I will not weep." When she said this, she didn't realise the effect it would have on her mother's life. Straight away, her mother ran back to the prison, went to the prison director, and told him she had made a huge mistake. "You convinced me that I should say wrong things for my daughter's sake, but she has more courage than I." Both Xiao Mei and her mother were returned to prison. Xiao Mei, a five-year-old girl, showed her mother the right thing to do. Not with a lengthy sermon, but with 8 simple words. "Mummy, today Jesus is not happy with you." In Timothy we get, "Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young. But set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity." Jeremiah felt it. So did Timothy. Jeremiah, one of the major prophets in Israel, expresses to God how he felt unworthy to speak for the Lord because he was too young. Paul was reassuring Timothy that even though he was young, he could still set a good example for the believers. Frequently we hear our young people referred to as the church of tomorrow. I would like to challenge that assertion. I would like to say that they are not the church of tomorrow. They are the church of today. And we need to listen to them just like Xiao Mei's mother listened to her five-year-old daughter. So I'm going to look at a few stories through the Bible today. We'll start with in Exodus. His sister stood at a distance to see what happened to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw a baby. He was crying and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" In Egypt, when the Pharaoh had commanded the death of every Hebrew boy that was born, Miriam risked her life coming to Pharaoh's daughter and offering to get a foster mother from the Hebrews. It would take much deductive, wouldn't take much deductive work to find, to realize that when you find a baby left in the river, the girl jumping out from behind a palm tree offering you help is probably related to that baby in some way. However, this is what she does. She's not scared of Pharaoh's daughter. She's bold. The story of Miriam doesn't end there. She goes on to be a respected prophetess throughout the Exodus. Let's move to Samuel. The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. One night, Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down in his usual place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered, "Here I am. You called me." And he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me." But Eli said, "I did not call you. Go back and lie down." So he went and lay down. Again, the Lord called Samuel, and Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me." "My son," Eli said, "I did not call you. Go back and lie down." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. A third time, the Lord called Samuel. And Samuel got up and went to Eli, and he said, "Here I am, you called me." Then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, "Go and lie down, and if he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. The Lord came and stood there, calling as at the other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening." Samuel was just a boy. His mother had sent him to the temple to serve the Lord. Many would say that you need to study for years to serve the Lord. And this is what Samuel was doing. It even goes so far as to say, now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. However, the Lord saw Samuel for who he was and the potential he saw in him. Not for how long he'd been studying or for what others thought he knew. He was a child and a novice who was chosen as the Lord's representative. And his first task? Go and tell your boss that I'm going to kill his whole family. Samuel 17. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a boy, and he has been fighting man from his youth." The Israelites were lined up for battle against the Philistines, and every day they were listening to a 3-meter-tall giant hurl insults at them across the battleground. Not only insults at them, but insults at their God. Not one of the men trained in battle would take up the challenge put to them or defend the name of their God. Instead, it was only a boy that stood up to be counted. But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine."
David wasn't really that big on modesty, was he? When a lion or a bear came, I went after it and struck it and killed it. Now we think he used a toy to beat Goliath, but the sling is far from a child's toy. They were used by shepherds to protect their flocks from wild animals. They were also used in warfare. So if he used a sling, he could strike them from a distance of 200 metres, and the stone that he threw could get up to 100 kilometres an hour. But then he goes on to say, when it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it and killed it. Now, I don't know about you kids, but if a lion or a bear comes near me, I'm not going to grab it by the hair. I'm going to turn and run away, or probably get it mauled by the lion or the bear. Anyway, the sling is a weapon that all the Israelite army would have been aware of, and many would have been skilled in its use. The slingers would stand behind the archers because a slinger could throw further than an archer could shoot an arrow. But it took it took David to use it to win the battle. In 2 Kings, now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet Elisha, who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Now we're in a patriarchal society here. We have a young girl, a slave, so she had no standing in society at all. And through her faith in God and her love for others, she went on to her mistress and expresses her belief in God. Through Elisha, God could cure Naaman. How easy would it have been to let her captors suffer and die? But no, this young slave witnessed to Naaman and his wife, and they listened to her. And as such, Naaman was cured of his leprosy. Now, my next point's been taken already this morning about Josiah, so I won't reread it. But after the evil kings of Manasseh and Ammon, Josiah's father and grandfather, it was an 8-year-old boy that became king. He then spent his time returning the Israelites to the ways of God. He rebuilt the temple, he destroyed the idols, and everything else that had been made under his father and his grandfather. The next story we're going to look at. When people think of Mary, the mother of God, we think of a woman probably in her 20s to 30s. In the 6th month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angels went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favoured, the Lord is with you." Now, in ancient Israel, a father lost the authority to annul his daughter's vows when she was 12 to 13 years old. At 13, that's when she became a woman, just like the boys became a man at 13. At this age, she would also lose the rights to her handiworks and any profits that she brought to the household, including the bride price. So it was in their best interest to get rid of their daughters before they were 13. In Israel, most women had had their first child before the age of 20. Now, if Mary was betrothed to be married but was not yet married, we can assume that she was somewhere in her early teens, Pathfinder age, and was pregnant with Christ. So God entrusted the training of the world's greatest man to a teenager. Every year, his parents went to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the feast according to the custom. After the feast was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. But they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they travelled on for a day. When they began looking for him among their relatives and friends, when they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When he was just a boy, so he wasn't 13 yet, everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. As leaders, when do we listen to our young people and ask them about their understanding of the scriptures? We spend our time teaching our young people about the scriptures. What about the disciples? Now, I asked some of the Pathfinders earlier, thinking about Jesus walking along the beach, collecting his disciples from the fishing boats, who they might think of. Now, Jeff Dever was one name that I was given. Paul Bauer, Phil Felberg. They sort of fit that stereotype that we all think of when we think of the disciples. We think Jesus was wandering around the Holy Lands, and he was 30 to 33, but we think of Peter with his grey beard, James and John, big burly men, sons of thunder. But where do we get our ideas of the disciples from? Jesus calling his disciples to be fishers of men, with the receding hairlines and well-worn features that age... Sorry, what age would they be before being called? Jesus washing the disciples' feet. All the grey hair, grey beards. Jesus and the disciples at the Last Supper. We have disciples who are almost totally bald. Others who are very grey. Then there are movie interpretations of the disciples. Here we have Peter from the movie Risen. Jesus with four of his disciples from the Jesus film. And John from the 1961 movie King of Kings. Now, a Jewish male was considered a man at 13. If this was the case, and this is when they can decide how they will practice their faith, this gives us a starting age for all of his disciples. Jesus looked around and said to his disciples, "How hard is it for rich to enter the kingdom of God?" The disciples were amazed at his words, but Jesus said again, "Children, how hard is it to enter the kingdom of God? It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of God." Now, Jesus isn't a run-of-the-mill teacher, but surely he wouldn't be referring to his grey-haired followers, his disciples that we just saw pictures of, as children. During the Last Supper, after Judas Iscariot left to betray Jesus, we have, "My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come." Now, Jesus was 30 to 33 years old during the time of his ministry, and here he is referring to his disciples as children. Could this be because they were young leaders? I've lost everything. Sorry. There we go. Each one who crosses over to those already counted is to give a half shekel according to the sanctuary shekel, which weighs 20 gerahs. The half shekel is an offering to the Lord. All who cross over, those 20 years old or more, are to give an offering to the Lord. What they're referring to here is the temple tax. In Matthew, After Jesus and his disciples arrived in Capernaum, the collectors of the 2 drachma temple tax came to Peter and asked, "Doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax?" "Yes, he does," he replied. When Peter came into the house, Jesus was the first to speak. "What do you think, Simon?" he asked. "From whom do the kings of the earth collect their duties and taxes? From their own children or from others?" "From others," Peter answered. "Then the children are exempt," Jesus said to him. "But so that we may not cause offence, go to the lake and throw out your line. Take the first fish you catch, open its mouth, and you will find a 4 drachma coin. Take it and give it to them for my tax and yours." Jesus was instructing Peter to only pay the temple tax, which is to be paid by all people 20 years and over, for the two of them, and none of the other disciples. This whilst saying that they weren't to cause offence. So why wouldn't there be an offence caused by not paying the tax for the other 11? That would be because all the other disciples were under the age of 20. This was nearing the end of Jesus' ministry of 3 years. The oldest they would have been at the time would have been 19, so the oldest at the start of his ministry would be 16. So when Jesus was collecting his disciples, all apart from Peter were aged 13 to 16 years old, like all of our pathfinders over here. Well, not all of them, because some of them are 10 to 12, but... Then little children were brought to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." Jesus clearly has a place in his heart for the children. But he also has a place in the kingdom. Let's finish where we began, at the call of Jeremiah. "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. Alas, sovereign Lord," I said, "I do not know how to speak. I am too young." But the Lord said to me, "Do not say I am too young. You must go to everyone I send you to and say whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you and will rescue you," declares the Lord. Then the Lord reached out his hand and touched my mouth and said to me, "I have put my words in your mouth." Now, our children aren't the church of tomorrow. Well, they are, because they will still be here tomorrow. But they are the church of today. The kingdom of heaven belongs to them, and they share this with all of us. Spend your time sharing with each other, young and old, learning from each other and building each other up so that we can create a stronger and more enduring church. If we wait until tomorrow for our new leaders, it will be too late. Let's invest in the church of today. Are you willing to discuss the Bible and what it means to you? Are you ready to answer the call when it comes? Don't look for excuses like Jeremiah. Don't be discouraged like Timothy. Listen to the call when and where it arrives, like Miriam and Samuel did. Be like Mary and the disciples. Let's listen to our young people, like Saul listened to David. Or Xiao Mei's mother listened to her daughter's wise words. And let's encourage our young people to be the church of today. I'd like to ask the Pathfinders to come back up. The words of the next song I'd like you to think of as well: remaining steadfast and remaining faithful to God. Thank you.